translation by his divine grace Srila Prabhupada. Bali Maharaj said, O best personality of Godhead, most worshipable for all the demigods, if you think that my promise has become false, I shall certainly rectify matters to make it truthful. I cannot allow my promise to be false. Please therefore place your third lotus footstep on my head. In response, please. Bali Maharaj said, O best personality of Godhead, most worshipable for all the demigods, if you think that my promise has become false, I shall certainly rectify matters to make it truthful. I cannot allow my promise to be false. Please, therefore, place your third lotus footstep on my head. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. Bali Maharaj could understand the pretense of Lord Vamanadev, who had taken the side of the demigods and come before him as a beggar. Although the Lord's purpose was to cheat him, Bali Maharaj took pleasure in understanding how the Lord will cheat his devotee to glorify the devotee's position. It is said that God is good, and this is a fact. Whether he cheats or rewards, It is said that God is good, and this is a fact. Whether he cheats or rewards, he is always good. Bali Maharaj therefore addressed him as Uttama Sloka, your lordship. He said, you are always praised with the best of selected verses on behalf of the demigods. You disguised yourself to cheat me, saying that you wanted only 3 paces of land, but later you expanded your body to such an extent that with 2 footsteps you covered the entire universe because you were working on behalf of your devotees. You do not regard this as cheating. Never mind, I cannot be considered a devotee. Nonetheless, because although you are the husband of the goddess of fortune, you have come to me to beg. I must satisfy you to the best of my ability. So please do not think that I wanted to cheat you. I must fulfill my promise. I still have 1 possession, my body. You have taken my wealth, but still I have my body. When I place my body for your satisfaction, please put your 3rd step on my head. Since the Lord had covered the entire universe with 2 steps, one might ask how Bali Maharaj's head could be sufficient for his 3rd step. Bali Maharaj, however, thought that the possessor of wealth must be greater than the possession. Therefore, although the Lord had taken all his possessions, the head of Bali Maharaj, the possessor, would provide adequate place for the Lord's 3rd step. Translation again. Bali Maharaj said, O best personality of Godhead, most worshipable for all the demigods, if you think that my promise has become false, I shall certainly rectify matters to make it truthful. I cannot allow my promise to be false. Please therefore place your 3rd lotus footstep on my head. Omagina Taramandasha Ganangana Salakaya Shakshasho Militam Yina Tasmai Sri Gurve Namaha Sri Jaitanya Manombistam Stabitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Karamaiham Vedanti Swabhadanti Kam Manombishnu Padaya Krishna Pastai Bhutale Shimati Shivaram Swami Jinavane Namombishnu Padaya Krishna Pastai Bhutale Shimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Jinavane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nivishesha Sunyavadi Pashtachaya Dashatarane Jai Shri Krishna Jaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadha Shivasadi Gauravaktivinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, I just want to seek the blessings of all the senior Vaishnavas and Vaishnavas present, because I can get the mercy to maybe speak on something that's of use in our spiritual life. In the first text, Sukadeva Goswami speaking to Maharaj Parikshit, and he's talking about Lord Vamanadeva. This is this whole chapter. And as we understand, Parikshit Maharaj is on the banks of the river Ganges, and he's just been ready to leave his body in 7 days. So he seeks out a pure devotee to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam, and Sukadeva Goswami arrives on the scene to actually direct and instruct him in spiritual life. Parikshit is one who wants to inquire. It means one who's inquiring. And Sukadeva Goswami is actually passing down this ripened mango from the top of the tree of Krishna's pastimes, and it's expertly being passed down from one person to another, as we say, through the parampara system. And the expert climbers of the tree will take the mango and pass it down so it doesn't get broken at the bottom, so he'll pass it on to the hearer. So this is a bona fide process, and these pastimes are ever fresh of Krishna's pastimes. So I was just thinking about, as it's opening up, the point of actually hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, and I just wanted to quote that 1.2.18, I don't really know the Sanskrit, but by regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam and by rendering of service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed. And loving service unto the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. So Bali Maharaj, he's offering himself. He's given us the good example of a devotee, humble. He's come as a beggar to beg help from Krishna and give everything. He also realizes that everything belongs to Krishna originally. So he's in knowledge, and on a material plane, I suppose, of looking at this in a reflective way as being a non-devotee, we would think that Bali Maharaj is lost, is losing everything. You know, this is not so good. He's going to lose so much. Well, why give it up? And as he was having that conversation with his spiritual master, Sukracharya said, "Don't. This is Lord Vishnu. He's going to take everything. So don't let it go." But we'll get to that part a bit more afterwards. But this is for a devotee, this is no loss. There's it's very reflective in a way of what seems a loss is actually a gain. It's like in the material world, it's like a perverted reflection of the spiritual world, as we understand. When Prabhupada gives the example, you're walking down the forest path and you look into the river and you see the tree. Reflection of the tree, and when you look into the river, you see the fruits that they're actually on the tree. But if you dive into the water, you'll get wet. You know, it's just this is what it's like in the material world. If we turn away from Krishna so much and try to be the controller and the enjoyer, we end up getting entangled and frustrated and very unhappy. Also, what is seen for a devotee in some ways is like in this first translation, O King, although the Supreme Personality of Godhead was superficially seen to have acted mischievously towards Bali Maharaj. But he was helping Bali ultimately. He was playing with him. He's playing with his devotee. And You know, he's only small. As we understand, Vamana, they've entered the arena, but he was very beautiful. And he was only a very short little dwarf, but he was of a golden complexion and very attractive. So Bali Maharaj, being so, very pure himself, was attracted to purity. And he asked the Brahmin, Lord Vamana, is there anything you want? I can give you anything. And Lord Vamana was very humble. He said, I just want three steps of land. You know, I don't really need anything else. I don't want to take more than I can't maintain. And through these steps, he covered the entire universe. And the point is on the... And it looked like he was mischievously behaving towards Bali Maharaj, but... This is like the reflection again. It's a bit reflective of diametric. It looks like could be a bad thing in some ways if one's got material vision, but it's a good thing because it gives the example. Prabhupada explains about the cat when he's carrying the kitten. If he carries a kitten in his teeth, he's carrying his children out of love. But that's like the devotee for the Lord. But When one's not in devotional service, the material nature, it's like the cat carrying the rat in his teeth, and which is in the jaws of death. It's not that one loses in devotional service. There's no loss or diminution, and a little advancement on this path protects one from the most dangerous type of fear. I was also reflecting to the point of like the Lord's great devotees, like Bhishma Dev as well. He was he was there on the battlefield, and ultimately Bhishma's also a Mahajan, one of the 12 Mahajans, like Bali Maharaj, and he's very enwrapped in Krishna's service. So one point in the battle, he Duryodhan approached him, and he was asking him, you know, you got so much affection for the Pandavas, why, you know, I need you to really step up your prowess on the battlefield. And after keep asking these things, Bhishma just said, okay, no problem. Tomorrow, I'm going to kill the Pandavas. I'm just going to show you I'm not attached, and I'm going to fight to the best of my ability. So he found these five arrows that he had, and they're very all made of gold and precious metals, and he surcharged them with his mantras, and they actually became very powerful weapons. Five of these arrows was one for each Pandava, and Duryodhan was very excited, so he took the arrows, he took them and hid them, put them under his bed and stuff as he slept. And but Krishna told Arjuna that you should go and get those arrows, because the Kauravas, Bhishma's going to try and kill you tomorrow with these arrows, but you owe a boon is owed to you from Duryodhan, from a previous time that he saved him. And I'll cut a long story short. Arjuna went and got the arrows because from Duryodhan. He asked Duryodhan at night. They went to the camp. We understand in those times the Kshatriyas didn't fight at night. They actually, they may fight when the sun's setting. And when the sun goes down, they all go and rest, and they would go to each other's camps to maybe play cards, have a drink and a talk. This was good manners in them days, but now everything's changed. So, he got the arrows back, and he gave the arrows, he took the arrows from Bhishma. And from Duryodhan. Duryodhan was very upset about this, so he told Bhishma, and Bhishma pledged. He said, "Well, no matter what, tomorrow I'll fight anyway to my maximum capacity, and there's no way that Arjuna will get away alive unless Krishna intervenes." So this was a nice pastime where Arjuna was so heavily suppressed by Bhishma's arrows that Krishna had to intervene. He actually broke his promise for his devotee. Krishna said, you know, when I fight in this battle, I won't get involved. I'll only be your chariot driver. And at this point, Krishna actually jumped off the chariot and picked up the chariot wheel and was going to kill Bhishma. But Bhishma is a pure devotee. He accepted this is a great fortune, and he just stood there with his arms open, and he wanted to be taken by the Lord. But Arjuna, because he was so wanting to protect the Lord's promise, he grabbed Krishna around the legs and he begged him not to go any further. So Bhishma also was ready to give everything. He's a great example. We understand, yeah. So Bali Maharaj, he's giving his head, basically. There's not much we can give back to Krishna, you know. Actually, everything, as I was saying before, it belongs to Krishna. So Ishwarasham Adam Sarvam Yakinchat Jagatam Jagat. Everything animate and inanimate in this universe is controlled and owned by the Supreme Lord. So we shouldn't take more than what really belongs to us, because we've got our quota. And so Bali Maharaj knew his quota, even though he owned the whole universe and was in charge of the whole creation, because he was the king of the universe at that point. He actually knew it all belonged to Krishna, so he was willing. That moment of need, he surrendered his head. Patram pushpam phalam toyam yomi bhakti priyajate. Krishna will accept with love and devotion a water, a leaf, a flower, or fruit. And this is what we offer back to Krishna. We should try to offer with devotion. Krishna's looking for the devotion ultimately, as we understand. And it's like a child that's you know, you might have your chewed up sweet and you're eating, the child's eating his sweet and his father's there, his father's giving him everything. But when the child takes his sweet out and offers it back to his father, the father doesn't sort of be disgusted, he actually reciprocates out of love. So most of us down here in our conditioned state, it is a bit of, it's like that situation. We've got this chewed up sweet of bhakti, we're trying to offer it back to Krishna. It's a bit of a mess, but Krishna sees the good, you know. It's and these are the qualities of a pure devotee, like Srila Prabhupada and his representatives that are on that, sincerely following the process. They look for the good in others, like the swan. The swan, he when he's drinking in the water, if there's milk, he can divide the milk from the water and get the nectar. Not like the flies that they hover around all the stool and the sores, and they just want to see the bad things. This is not good for our spiritual life. So we should try and see the good in others. And the Srila Prabhupada exemplarily done this. He had, as we understand, when he first came, he said that it was like, Krishna's given me fifth class men or something like that, but still, I we can put everything to good use. He saw the good qualities, the minute good qualities in everyone, and he used those in Krishna's service. And so this is important to remember that we should try to see the good, as I was saying. Like Bali Maharaj, he was a demon. He was actually a demon from the demoniac dynasty, but fortunately he had Prahlad Maharaj was his grandfather, so he had blessings and some good fortune from Prahlad Maharaj. And also Prahlad Maharaj was very exemplary, because he gave up all his family attachments, you know. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda Shri Sitaram Lachman Hanuman Gulanitai Ki. He gave up his father as well, because his father was very demoniac and he was persecuting his son, who was a pure devotee. But he did want, out of his compassion as a devotee, though, he wanted his father to get liberation and benefit from after being punished by Hiranyakashipu, by Lord Nrisingadev. And Bali Maharaj also gave up his family or sentimental attachments, because his Guru Maharaj, Sukracharya, was a spiritual master, but he was very materially motivated. He wasn't giving him the absolute truth of Krishna's service and association of devotees. He had saved Bali Maharaj previously in a battle. Bali had fought, and he lost his life at that point, and I can't remember exactly what happened. I think he got crushed. Anyway, someone would know. But basically, Sukracharya brought him back to life. So he felt he also owed his life to Sukracharya. So he was in debt in a way. But when Vamana entered, Sukracharya was telling him not to actually give him anything. But Bali Maharaj knew this was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is the ultimate goal, is to worship the Lord. So at that point he had to reject his spiritual master. Even though the spiritual master saved his body, this materialistic spiritual master, he was more interested in Bali Maharaj needed to save his soul through surrendering to Krishna. So unless the spiritual master is going to save our soul, which if we're sincere, obviously we attain a bona fide spiritual master, so this shouldn't be too much of a problem. But yeah, so we see there he's given up his material attachments. So I'm just going to. When Lord Vamana was taking his steps, on his first step, he covered most of the universe, upper and lower. Middle and lower, and then on his second step, when he went to the highest point, when he touched the universal covering with his toe, and Mother Ganga came through, and it was also chosen that Lord Shiva take this role to guide her into the material world. And at that point, when Mother Ganga was coming through, she was coming through very fast, very powerfully, and Lord Shiva stood up to receive her. But when she came in, she tried to take him out, go underneath his feet so fast that he would have gone. But he was very clever, and when she came, he moved in a certain way and picked Ganga up and put it into his head and tied her in his knots so she could be distributed properly into the material realm. So they also have a relationship, Lord Shiva and Mother Ganga. I think from there they're married, and they had a child, Kartikeya. Skanda at some point. But so everything's done perfectly. It's all a perfect situation. Krishna's, everything's working under Krishna's order. Maya Dakshina Prakriti Suyache Sahara Charanam Hitu Inu Kuntiya Jagadavya Pravartante. The material nature is working under my direction as producing all moving and non moving beings by its rule. This manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. So the third step, which we were talking about, the humble act of Bali, where he puts his head to Lord Vamana, and this is exemplary, because humility is the first item of knowledge. Explains in Bhagavad Gita chapter 13 text 12. There's 20 items of knowledge, and everyone can sort of read those. Not now, but we could go over those. Those items of knowledge, because humility is the first one, and with humility, one can attain great help from Krishna. Like if you have if you want to learn something at school or college, you go there, and if you go in the classroom saying you know everything to the teacher, and you don't really need to learn too much, you just need to be brushed up on a few things. He may tell you to move on and don't worry about the lesson. But if one approaches sincerely and wants to learn and asks for guidance, then one can get help from the representative to guide us, the bona fide teacher. Arjuna also says this in Bhagavad Gita. He approaches Krishna in this way when he's very distraught, 2:7. Arjuna says that now I am confused about my duty and I've lost all composure because of miserly weakness. In this condition, I am asking you to tell me for certain what is best for me. Now I am your disciple and a soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. So, yeah, this is like Bali Maharaj is doing this. He's offering his head, his life, and he's asking, dear Lord, do what you want with me. This is very high level of devotion, but it's actually to be aspired. We should aspire for this and follow in the footsteps of the pure devotees. Like in Govardhan, there's these many sadhus walk around Govardhan Hill, and sometimes they walk very fast. And there's a nice lecture by Vaisheshika Prabhu. He's explaining that when he goes around Govardhan, he goes around very early in the morning, and what he tries to do when he sees a sadhu come in, he goes past, he walks really fast behind him in his footsteps, so he doesn't step on too many thorns because they know the place very well. And this is like the example that we should follow, the examples of great devotees and around us as well, because we're very fortunate to have the ultimately the disciple succession, parampara, and also the living devotees, the walking Bhagavats in our presence, you know, because there's two types of Bhagavats, we understand, you know, there's the book Bhagavat, but there's also the devotee that's living the book, and they can help guide us. And so association of devotees hearing the holy name, residing in a holy place, seeing the Lord, and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, it's very beneficial for our spiritual life. Keeps us, you know, chanting his holy name continuously. It's helping us keep molded for adapting in our spiritual life, for actually when a chance comes to advance or to serve, we're ready to take the offer. Okay. But without the chanting of the holy name and the lubrication of the process, it makes us hard, where we're just like, you know, if one doesn't chant the holy name and we become a non-devotee, they're almost set in stone. Not that they've always got the chance, though, to become Krishna conscious, but without the holy name, it sets us so strongly, makes our heart hard. So this softens the heart, the holy name, and it keeps us moldable to advance in our spiritual life. Bali also, it was interesting because Bali says here, I'm not a devotee. You know, he's just thinking of that point, you know, a pure devotee actually says, I'm not a devotee. He doesn't, but he knows he's protected. And I was just thinking, it's very attractive, because it always shows that he's ready for room for improvement. A devotee should always see that. Like when I used to do Sankirtan, I'd go on the street and, you know, you meet many different people from different religions, and sometimes, like, say, sometimes the Christians, not that they're all the same, but you can get some that are quite staunch, and they say, you know, are you saved? You know, and because I'm saved, I know where I'm going. They're so confident, and I'm thinking, well, but I think the way a devotee should see this is that he doesn't just say he's instantly saved. We know that we understand we're going towards Krishna, and Lord Chaitanya's mercy is it's unlimited, but still we don't take it for granted. There's always more work to be done. There's always a room for improvement, you know. So it's up to the Lord's sweet will what he does with us. As Lord Chaitanya says in the 8th Sikshashtakam, you know, do with me as you wish. I don't leave me broken hearted, but you'll always be the object of my worship. I can't translate it directly, but yes, and in that sort of way, this should be the aspiration for the devotee. It's to remember Krishna and not forget him. This is the goal. And I was just thinking, it's a need, because we never know when death's going to come. You know, in our conditioned state being here, we, you know, this is like, Sukadeva Goswami speaking to Parikshit Maharaj. Parikshit Maharaj, in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, he asks us two main questions. You know, what am I to do? What's a man meant to do in his life? And what's a man to do who's about to die? Those two questions. And Sukadeva Goswami says, these are very important questions, but they're actually one question, you know, because you never know when death's going to come. It can happen at any moment. And as we see, you know, I remember looking on the internet once, and I think they've taken it off now, but there was these statistics. They were continuously moving these numbers, and it was showing you when someone was born, when someone's dying, you know, someone's getting cancer, someone's, you know, it was a lot of these movements, and it was like every 2.5 seconds there was a death, and every 2 seconds there was a birth. It's happening just because we can't see it. That's like Yudhisthira Maharaj. He approaches Lord Yamaraj, and he gives him, Lord Yamaraj questions him 48 questions, and there's four primary questions, and one of those is, you know, what's the most amazing thing in this world? And Yudhisthira explains the most amazing thing in this world is that, you know, everyone's being born at every moment, people are dying at every moment. A man sees his family members, his elder family members have died, but he doesn't think it's going to happen to him. You know, I'm not going to die. So this is the human form of life is for Tata Brahma Jignasa, is for inquiry. We're a rational animal. You know, we're here to inquire. So we end it 5:30. So I'll stop now, if that's right. We can maybe stop for some questions or comments or corrections. Whatever.